here, and welcome back to the Clarity Podcast. This podcast is all about providing clarity, insight, and encouragement for life and mission. And my name is Aaron Sandemeyer, and I'm going to be your host. Today, we have the phenomenal opportunity to have with us in the podcast, Tom Hardiman. Tom and I first met in Orlando, Florida at a CSPN, Child Safety and Protection Network meeting. I was there learning what it looked like to work within an organization and develop a child safety plan. And CSPN gave you the seven elements of a child safety plan. And so this month of April, we on the podcast, we've taken specific episodes to dedicate toward child safety. It's something that's near and dear to my heart. We know Heather and I have raised our kids on the mission field, so we know what it is to have our kids living overseas and the joys and challenges of that and the importance of child safety. I remember when we got to Burkina Faso, we arrived there and something happened and it just made us realize the importance of families talking about what it means to keep your children safe, colleagues and organizations to have these conversations. And so, yeah, just with the podcast, want to dedicate at least one episode every April just to the purpose of promoting child safety. So reached out to Tom. Tom is now the executive director of CSPN, Child Safety and Protection Network. And we had a great conversation. Tom grew up as an MK, grew up on the field, has that experience and wisdom and insight. And so it was just great to sit down with him and learn from him on his experience. He'll give some great advice for team leaders and families. He'll also give some great advice for families, moms and dads. We also talk about the importance of not just people with children making sure that children are safe, but also those that are serving solo, those that are single, the important role that each of us play in creating healthy environments. And it's not just the idea of that we want to put walls up. Tom will share about putting walls up. That's not the goal, and Tom shares that. It's creating a place where there can be healthy relationships between adults and children, and just the importance of that. Do want to ask you to continue to send in your questions for Back Channel with Foth. That's where I get to sit down with Dick Foth, and we get to learn from him. That's always one of the highlights for me, just learning from Dick and his wisdom and his experience and his love for missionaries, and that comes through on those sessions. Also want to ask you to continue to subscribe to the podcast. I know the podcasts that I subscribe to are the ones that I listen to. They're there, and I don't have to use my data to download them. They're downloaded on Wi-Fi, and so when I'm out, I enjoy that. And then the third thing, my book is coming out, A Caring Family. It's kind of a second follow-up from the A Caring Life. It was my first book. And so that's coming out in the fall. And so excited for that to come out. And there'll be more of that coming in the days to come as we've developed a Bible study to go around it. And so you can walk through it in a biblical perspective. And this, the importance of seven virtues of a caring family. Well, there's no time better than now to get started. So here we go. Greetings and welcome back to the Clarity Podcast. So excited to be here today with a new friend of the podcast, Tom Hardiman. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Aaron. It's great to be here with you.
Tom, you and I were catching up a little bit before I hit record, and you and I had met in Orlando at a CSPN conference way back. That was when the COVID days, when you still had to have COVID tests to fly and all that good stuff. But for Tom, for those who do not know you well, would you share just a little bit about yourself before we jump into some of the questions I have for you today?
Sure, certainly. I was born in Manila, Philippines, to missionary parents there who stayed and ministered at an MK school for 60 years. Then I myself, with my wife, served as a missionary in Japan for 14 years at Christian Academy in Japan, and then 14 years in the Philippines at Faith Academy, back at the school where my parents were serving. So I came and became their boss, which was interesting. And currently work as the child safety advocate for our mission, and recently became the executive director for the Child Safety Protection Network. I'm married, have six children, ages 16 to 37, two birth daughters and four adopted kids.
So, Tom, so did you grow up in the Philippines then? Your parents, you said, were there for 6 years. So what was it like growing up? What did Tom do growing up in the Philippines for fun?
Oh, go exploring out in the neighborhood. I love to go on walks around, just see what's happening there. And I grew up playing, my family were basketball fanatics. So okay. I grew up playing basketball and volleyball. But for free time, love to ride a bike or just hang out with Filipino friends and chill.
Very, very cool. Very, very cool. I worked in Lakeland, Florida. One of the first jobs that I had as a nurse, the lady I served with was Marguerite, and she was from the Philippines. And she went back to Philippines and brought me these desserts. She was so happy to give me these desserts and things that she considered sweets that she loved. And I tried to smile through them, but it was just not the taste that I was expecting when I bit into the sweets. That they were more, they didn't have a whole lot of sugar. I don't know. And she loved them, and I ate them, but they were just a little different than I had. It was a little different than apple pie. I would just say that. So anyway, good stuff.
They have Tom, some interesting things that they like to eat there.
Yeah. Tom, for sure. We're going to spend some time today talking about child safety. I know this is something that you're passionate about. Could you share maybe some of the genesis of the story of where your passion for child safety is? And then maybe somebody's listening in and they say, what do you exactly mean by child safety? Would you just share a little bit about your passion for it, where it originated at? And when we talk about child safety, what exactly we're talking about?
Sure. Yes. Well, from an early age, I remember as a teenager, often feeling like children are marginalized, and they don't often have a voice, and they're a vulnerable part of our society. And I just recognized that early on. And after high school, I studied to be an elementary teacher and saw that as a means of investing in the lives of children. And I wanted not only to help them thrive as learners, but also to show them how adults can be their advocates. And I always wanted children that I worked with to feel heard and understood. As I moved into administration, first as an elementary principal at CAJ, then head of school at Faith Academy, I became much more aware of the many ways that children suffer harm and abuse, not just from strangers, but from family members and friends at school. So this increased awareness compelled me to explore ways that our school could support and protect children in our care. So when I say child safety, I'm looking at not just when someone is hurt or harmed, taking action, it's being proactive to look ahead and say, what can we do to put in place safeguards to prevent harm from happening to children? What are things that we need to raise awareness in the community to help people be on the lookout for potential things that could endanger children? And by doing that, we're not trying to be alarmist as much as create an environment where children can thrive and be healthy in their relationships. So that's been my passion, both with child safety in the Child Safety Protection Network and in our mission as a child safety advocate.
Yeah. And then growing up as a TCK or an MK, did that have any impact on this desire for and passion for child safety, or has that influenced? I mean, I would imagine I'm not an MK. I'm the only non-MK in my house or TCK. But has that influenced you in just this passion and desire to see children and have safe environments?
Certainly. I believe that TCKs in particular are more vulnerable in the populace because they don't really fit in the country where their family's serving. You know, they may enjoy that, but they don't really fit there, and they often don't fit in their passport country. So they don't really have a place to be. Or when that happens, they're more vulnerable because they're on the outside more. And that people that are looking to harm children often look for loners. So kids that don't necessarily easily fit in can be more vulnerable in that way. So that's where I think, as growing up in that and feeling that myself, not really the belongingness of where do I fit?
Yeah.
And wanting that to be smoothed over a bit for the kids that are growing up today.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Tom, I found in my life that there often when I cross paths with someone who inspires me, and honestly, this child safety, I think of when I think of it within our organization, the person would be Kevin McGee. He's a missionary who served in Kenya, and he started talking about it. And honestly, it was not something that was even really on my radar. Now, we had some experiences when we lived in Burkina with global workers causing with problems with abuse. But it wasn't until Kevin McGee brought it up to me and said, hey, this is something I'm passionate about. It made me begin to think. And it really, honestly, he inspired me. Is there someone, a mentor, a friend, or a colleague that has encouraged you? And now you're in the leadership of the Child Safety and Protection Network. So is there somebody that encouraged you or mentored you or you've learned from along the way?
There certainly is. A gentleman named Tim McGill, who was the head of school at Morrison Academy in Taiwan. I was head of school at Faith Academy at the same time he was, and he kind of took me under his wing, always encouraged me. And when I was looking for ways to increase the child safety awareness of our school, Tim really pointed the direction towards CSPN. And I didn't know at that time that he was on the board. And as he was stepping off the board, he actually put my name in, like, let's look, see if Tom Hardiman would like to be on the board. So I ended up on the board of CSPN, thanks to Tim. And through the years, that friendship has remained. And when Tim left the role of head of school at Morrison, he became our first interim executive director for the Child Safety Protection Network and really started that off well. And as he was stepping out, he once again put my name in the hat as his replacement. In many ways, he's kind of led the path. And I've said to him jokingly, okay, Tim, what's our next adventure after this happens?
Yeah,
we'll see where God takes us. But his passion for child safety, and he's a servant leader and so focused and dedicated. I've grown a lot through relationship and friendship with Tim.
For sure. So, Tom, this is child safety. Sometimes it's not something that necessarily gives you, because you, the definitions, you look at child abuse and child harm, some, it doesn't necessarily give you joyous feelings all the time. It can be heavy. But Tim inspired you. How did that, anything that you would counsel or direction you would give somebody that's looking to share their passion with somebody else that would encourage them, maybe rather not move them away from it? Is that a fair question? Does that make sense?
I think so. I think it goes back to focusing on how we can, instead of focusing on the negative, how we can create the best environment possible
for healthy
relationships. Because child protection is not just about protecting the kids. It's protecting the adults from making stupid choices, you know. And in the setting that we're in the missionary field, that's increases the level of vulnerability, both for adults to make poor choices and for kids to be abused.
Yeah.
So trying to help people think on the positive side to, hey, we want to be proactive as possible to set in guidelines. And having grown up on the mission field, when it's like anything goes, you know, we're all family, it's all good, let's just do this, we're, you know, kumbaya, and it's wonderful.
Yeah,
there is that certain level of that for sure. But the problem with that is then you let down all guards and there's lack of accountability and there's still the stress of being in an environment like that for missionaries. And if there's any kind of weaknesses there, that's the kind of area where that's going to come out. And so putting in safeguards is for the benefit of the adults and the children and having that be more the focus. People think you're going to build a wall between children and adults. That's the way to keep them safe. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about building stronger and healthier relationships and environments for children to thrive and adults to have healthy relationships with them.
Good word. So we've talked about Child Safety Protection Network, a little bit about it, but somebody listening in is probably thinking, well, what exactly is Child Safety Protection Network and how does it work with organizations? Would you share just a little bit about that, Tom, what it is and how it equips and works with organizations and with missionaries on the ground?
Yeah. When back in 2006, there was a lot going on in the mission scene in terms of mission organizations and Christian national schools responding to issues of abuse. And it was in that setting that about 13 different mission organizations got together and said, nobody is doing this cooperatively. We're all kind of trying to manage this on our own. So CSPN as a network was founded out of a need that was really burgeoning at that point and has continued to grow for people to become more savvy in how do we protect kids and be more forward thinking. And so what the CSPN focuses on is equipping through education. There's a training program called the Response Team Training, which is an 18-hour course that really helps to equip people that are working in child safety to what do you do when a child safety issue is raised. Sometimes they're pretty simple, but sometimes they'd be really complex. And how do you navigate that? And what are the ways to care for the child that's been harmed, the child maybe that did the harm, or the individual, the community, the family? So the response education is really bigger than just coming in and do triage and off you go. It's trying to help the community put in place things that won't allow that to happen again. And we also have something called the Program Essentials Training, which is if you have a mission or a school or an organization that doesn't have a child safety program, this PET is really to help them get that program started. So that's one aspect, the education, but the connecting part is really a critical piece, because if you're in this isolated setting and you're trying to figure this all out yourself, you know, why reinvent things that over here, there's this group that's, they've got it all going together and they're just clicking. Why not partner together? And that's what it's all about in the network, trying to bring resources and people together. We have ways that there are, we have a list of people that say, I will help in these kind of situations, and they can contact the network and find out how to partner them together. You know, there are people that will help with responses. So that it's really about how can we work together to protect as many children as possible.
That's a good word. And we've benefited from that. So I took the PET. That was the training that I was involved in. And then we are working with a group of, in our organization, working with a group of people and trying to come together with a proposal for a child safety policy. And it has been such a blessing, as you said. Not that you're, and CSPN recommends, don't cut and paste. It's not cut and paste, but at least you have, I love it because it at least gives you some bones. And there's a lot of flesh there too to work off of. It gives you structure. It lets you, gives you, these are the key seven elements of a child safety program. It's been so valuable for us because, like you said, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. And then you also have people who have been so kind as far as sharing resources, encouragement. Hey, this is what we found. This is some unique challenges you might run into. And I think it is it would be a daunting task, I would say, at that, if you had to start from zero, even if you had to start from 50%, it would be a daunting task. But it's made so much blessing.
That can really be deflating. Like you had said earlier, it's not a fun thing to be involved with. And sometimes responses can be really hard.
Yeah.
And so being a part of a network where people get that and can help support you and encourage you in that journey, that's a critical piece too. They understand it. You're not having to explain why this is so hard and how they just get it. And that's, so the conferences often bring people together for that purpose as well.
And it's just as you shared earlier, Tom, it was valuable for me. As you begin to have conversations, people say, why are we talking about this? You said this is a healthy thing. You mentioned it earlier. We're looking for healthy relationships. It's not just to avoid harm and abuse, but we want healthy relationships. And I value that because it helped me frame the discussion of what we're really looking for. It's focused on the child and the adults and having a healthy relationship and what that looks like. And so it's I could go on forever, but I'm a fan. I love CSPN. It's been a blessing to us and really, really appreciate everything. So when it comes to child safety, what are some of the misconceptions or maybe some of the inaccurate beliefs that people that you've encountered or maybe that people have made up in their minds about what it is and what it's not?
I think one of the biggest ones in especially the missionary world is the thought that a missionary would never harm a child physically or sexually. They're just not going to do that. They're not wired that way. We're people, first and foremost, so that I can break down each myth, or I can tell you some of the other ones where when harm or abuse does happen in a missionary community, that a myth is that it's going to be dealt with quickly, honorably, and taken appropriate action. Mm. It's often shoved under the carpet, set aside, and that's caused a lot more harm. It's not been dealt with in an effective way, in really a God-honoring way. Yeah. It's been we will at all costs not, you know, divulge this because it's going to there's lots of terms that are used. It's going to bring, you know, shame to God, when in reality what happens is it does such injury to people that further shame and harm is done. Mm. Another myth is that people believe that their tight screening process will weed out anyone seeking to gain access to children. Would that be that that's true? There are so many other things. You can't just rely on a screening process to do that work for you. Yeah. And it's keeping an awareness and keeping everybody above board in how they treat each other. In other words, if you have that screen in the beginning and then you let it all loose after that, you're asking for trouble. Okay. And
That's good.
And I think some of the biggest drawbacks that happen is the lack of transparency and accountability. Those are places where when you're going to ask for trouble, when you have low accountability and no transparency, you're going to have trouble. I mean, that's where sin thrives in whatever form it takes.
Yeah. And so, Tom, that accountability and transparency, is does that begin in the beginning process, or is any more wisdom on that, on the transparency and accountability?
Well, I think that aspect is something that in the missionary setting in particular is critical to a life that's thriving in all aspects. Particular one, you could say, hey, you know, I'm not going to do anything. I don't really have it. This is a silly rule. I don't need to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Makes good sense. Good sense. So leaders and team members of missions organizations, how can they move forward in discussing child safety and this pre-planning? Because sometimes it can be daunting, and it can be uncomfortable. And so how do they push through that uncomfortableness, and leaders, team members, and organizations to make some progress on this?
I think the first essential step is recognizing the need for it, because that's something that many people just glance over, like, we're good. That would never happen here. We have it all up and running just fine. So we don't really need to look into that. And that's come back to bite many organizations and schools. So, and over time, historical cases have shown that you can't set things aside. It's being proactive, taking those steps initially to say, we're going to do all we can to put these things in place from the beginning, building that foundation. And looking at what is our situation here? What are the areas that we really, there could be potential harm? So it's being open-minded to explore the fact that this is a reality we need to deal with as a mission and an organization. And putting together all that you can, and it doesn't have to be on your own, as we were saying earlier. Organizations like the CSPN are there to help other organizations start a child safety program. So you don't have to say, I've got to figure this all out myself, and go to a training like that and get all the pieces laid out before you. And that helps to jumpstart the program. I think, again, you're not going to be able to go anywhere until you are accountable, transparent with your people to let them know from the start, this is where we're heading and why we're heading, and giving them that game plan helps them feel safe about who you are. And it's building that trust. We had a false start, as it were, at our school with the child safety program that was so draconian. It was like doing investigations that were making people so nervous that they were ready. Everybody was guilty before they were they had any chance to prove anything. And then when I talked to the child safety lead, his main focus was adults are guilty until proven innocent. You can't do that in a community without destroying all trust that's there. And so the well-meaning adults that were serving the school were ready to jump ship. Yeah. It was a very close call. It wasn't until we did an about face to move that way of thinking aside and partner with the teachers and, you know, your members of the organization to say, we're doing this together. This is why we're doing it, and giving them the game plan of how we're going to do this, and giving people the ability, raising the barrier of feeling this is some secret society that does the checking out, you know, Big Brother watching us. It's not that at all. It takes a partnership for everyone to feel like I'm empowered to raise a concern if I see that, from the lowest child to, you know, the oldest adult to the anybody that's in the organization should have the easy ability to raise a concern, to note that this is something that bothers me. And you have a team then that takes that, and it doesn't always create a huge response, but it helps generate the trust that they care. We're going to, and when they see this is turned in and they actually dealt with it in a reasonable way, it builds trust.
Yeah.
So that the next time they feel more willing to say, yeah, and I saw that too. And
yeah,
the partnership.
Tom, so you've talked to, you know, missions. I think sometimes we're complex people, missionaries, and I'm mm-hmm. we've been missionaries 22 years. So I'll use myself as an example. So I would say, well, Tom, I've been in this organization 22 years, and shouldn't my track record prove? Why do I now have to start doing a training for child safety? And now there's all these changes. What, I've been 22 years. Nothing's happening in 22 years, Tom. Why are you telling me I have to do this now? How would you respond to that?
That's a great one, because that's actually happening as we launch a program in our mission. We've been a mission organization for 70 years,
yeah.
and we're very family oriented. And so some people are just like you said, why now? What are we doing this? And explaining that, you know, that we're not doing this because there's been some big thing that's happened. We're trying to prevent big things from happening. Sure. And so if you think of like a river that's going along and you notice that in time it's going to erode the bank away,
yeah.
you start doing things to keep that from happening.
Mm.
And that's, if you don't, then little by little it falls out and soon you have a large loss of land.
Sure.
Well, in child safety, it's the same kind of thing. As you're thinking about, we're not trying to accuse you that you're going to do something, but we need you to partner with us yeah. to ensure that the children have the safest environment possible. They can thrive with our partnership together.
Yeah.
So it's, again, focusing on the positive side of that.
Yeah, it's good work. So our world is rapidly changing. And so the missions world that I'm just saying, even in my 22 years, it's changed a lot. Okay. So Tom, you've grown up, I didn't grow up overseas. You grew up overseas. You've probably seen a lot more changes than I have. So when you look at our rapidly changing world in the landscape, are you seeing any trends or trends in child safety and things that you're seeing become more prominent today than maybe 10 years or 20 years or when you were on the field as a young man?
Well, certainly when I was a young man, there was not the internet.
Sure.
And sure. That has just exponentially in the last few years skyrocketed, the issues through social media, the online bullying, the sexting, the pornography, things that were certainly not in place when I was growing up, but our kids have to deal with now that I think it's much harder than when I was. I'm not going to say, you know, when I was a kid, it was, no,
sure.
It's when they're dealing with things that are so much more complex and complicated and in your face. We could ignore, you had to go into a porn shop and, you know, go shopping that right. way if you wanted. And now right. kids carry that around in their pocket all the time. Everybody has a phone
right.
and that phone can not just be a source of the pornography, but the source of being bullied, of being attacked and ostracizing the kids. So
yeah.
That to me is the biggest way that we've seen child safety issues skyrocket. Kids mm-hmm. don't even have to face to face to cause harm anymore. They can cause significant harm through social media and a phone.
Hmm.
And it's tearing our families apart in many yeah. ways. And you add into that the COVID and isolation of COVID,
yeah.
and it just ratcheted that all up even more so.
Yeah. Wow. So Tom, you shared, somebody might be listening and say, well, Tom, what do you mean by causing harm on a phone? They're wondering, what does that look like?
It has become the platform for people to say whatever they want with complete anonymity and immunity. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, it's a great tool. I don't, you know, wouldn't throw out all of that because it gives a voice to people. Yeah. But that voice can be used in a very positive way or in a significantly negative way. And by negative, I mean if someone starts ragging on Johnny on social media,
right,
everybody jumps on that. And all of a sudden, there's a whole world of people, it feels like, to that child that's against them, that's saying these nasty things about them. And they may not even know them. But they start ragging on them to the point, you know, we've seen kids that will commit suicide because they don't see any hope. They don't see a way out of that.
Yeah.
And they take that all to such heart. You know, where their standing is socially can be impacted by how many likes they get or don't get. And they post something and people, instead of liking it, start disliking it or, you know, dissing it and putting it down. And that is, it's hard for maybe us to understand that aren't the digital natives that grew up in this, but it is heartrending for them. And so that's an area, in fact, our next conference that CSPN is going to have will focus on the digital world and helping kids navigate that. Because I think that's a critical piece.
For sure, for sure. So maybe there's some leaders and their parents and parents listening in. And they talked about this idea of, you talked about earlier, about raising a concern. And they want to see that in their homes, and they want to see that in their organizations, where people can raise a concern. If they have a concern, it's raised, and they can trust that it's going to be handled, as you said, in a right manner. How do they walk in that? Maybe right now they're hesitant to raise a concern, or that's not existing. In
helping people understand that raising a concern doesn't necessarily mean someone's going to lose their job or get kicked out of the country, and people in their mind, they catastrophize what's going to happen if I speak up. And so it's helping people from the beginning see that we are not trying to raise huge alarms. I mean, if it's necessary, of course we want that. But by focusing on how turning in something that you see that seems pretty nondescript and not a big deal, actually, when a lot of those come in, it starts creating a picture that the child safety team can take and say, we need to make a change here because we can see down the road this is going to lead to potential harm for kids.
Yeah.
So we ask that people don't try to evaluate, is this something weighty enough for me to turn in? So that shouldn't be on the people that, you know, kids and families, should I... is this worthy of turning in? Anything that makes you, your gut or your senses that this is not right, they should turn that in. And but that, again, goes back to starting with the trust, building the trust that we're going to be reasonable. We're going to handle this in a way that is responsible. And one of the things that we really encourage organizations to do is clearly state that the priority of the child, their well-being of the child, needs to be tantamount. And by that means not getting to the root of the problem is the issue, and, you know, at all costs, because then you can end up doing further damage to the child in order to protect that child. So keeping them at the forefront, their well-being, and then responding with compassion to all those that are involved. And going through, if there are certain laws that apply to this, making sure that you're compliant with those laws so that people don't think we're trying to act above the law. No, we're serving under the law. We're not police and, you know, official organizations. We're helping support families.
Yeah.
So being compassionate and showing through your responses that it's well thought out. It's not a knee jerk. Oh, they did this, we're going to kick them out. No, it goes through a process of really analyzing and getting input. And so it's a very considered process.
It's very, very good.
Confidential.
Yes. Also, and one of the things I learned in CSPM was the idea of not using the word victim, but using the word child. And I think was very valuable for me to understand that and the importance of that. And do you have any more thoughts on that, Tom, on that idea that the child's at the center and not the label of victim? Is that a fair question?
Yes. I think it really helps to not, because on the opposite side of that, if you use the term victim, you also use the term perpetrator.
Yeah.
Those are terms that go together. And that is casting both individuals in something that we want to stay away from because it stereotypes both the rationale of the person creating the harm and the person receiving that harm. And instead just saying, this is a child that both of them might be children that need care, attention, support, some guidance along the way. And so it prevents it from becoming a clinical thing and keeps it close to the heart of the priority of the well-being of the child, both on both sides of that.
Good word. Good word. One last question for you I have, Tom. Parents that maybe they're listening into this and they're living overseas, what are some practical points that you think each family could take to promote child safety in their home?
I would start by opening the discussion. And kids, they may have these thoughts going on in their heads. They might have heard about it at school, but in the home, it's a different arena. So I think that it's important for the school to partner with the parents, let them know what's going on there. So then the parents can follow up with, oh, I heard you talk about this in school today. What do you think about that? What's in our neighborhood, in our setting here? What could that look like? What do you think you need to be aware of? Not raising fears for them as much as raising, again, the awareness for the kids from a very early age and getting them to feel able to say, you know, that makes me uncomfortable. I don't like it when this happens. That's often where the line is drawn for kids. They, especially in the missionary setting, they can start thinking, if I say something, it could harm mom and dad's ministry. You know, that's one of the myths that kids buy into, that I can't say anything because then mom and dad might be taken off the field. Or so parents really need to lower those barriers for a transparency, a healthy talk for the kids to feel free to say, I don't like it when Uncle Harry in the mission picks me up and kisses me. It's I don't like it. You know, I had that happen to me as a kid, and it was like the parents were saying, that's great. You know, we just love Harry. And it's like, I don't like that. And shouldn't I, as a kid, have the right to be able to say, I don't want that? And it's giving the kids that right and the freedom. And that takes conversation. It takes willingness on parents to go there, to empower the kids to not feel trapped and feel able to talk about what's bothering them.
Yeah, that's a good word. Good word. And, you know, increasingly, at least in our mission, I said I wasn't going to ask you any more questions, but I'm going to ask you one more. Increasingly, we have more people serving solo or serving single on the field. There's such a value, such a blessing. And at the same time, is there a role that they would play in child safety? Maybe they say, well, I don't have kids. I don't need to be worried about child safety. I don't have kids. This is not necessarily my concern. But somebody's serving single, somebody solo. Do you believe, I believe, but you're the professional. They have an integral part in child safety. And man, would you have just any words for them?
They most certainly do. It is those kinds of relationships that kids often look to for validation, for to be involved. And that's what I'm saying when we had the auntie-uncle relationships, those are good. And a single person can definitely have that kind of relationship. It's buying into, we want this to be as healthy as possible, and looking out for those kids that are around you. I think it's the job of everybody, not just parents. It's everybody that's around, adults that are around, to be on the lookout for keeping the kids safe. So it's working together. We need all the eyes we can have. And if we're all looking, then there's no place to hide. If there's anything going on, there's nothing that's set aside in a dark corner, because we're on the lookout for each other. And so whether you're single or married or whatever your situation is, you can play a central role in that.
Yeah. And I'm so thankful for those that are serving single and serving solo. They're a blessing. And as I said, I was setting you up, but I do believe they play an integral role in this. And just wanted to hear it from the professional or the wise one. So, Tom, it's been an honor to spend some time with you today, my morning, your evening. Would you pray for us that God will use this conversation for those that listen in to encourage them?
I'd be happy to. Father God, we recognize your sovereignty over each of our situations, our lives. And Lord, you have demonstrated that children are a priority, are to be honored, are to be listened to and cared for. And Jesus, when he was here, gave us such a good example of that. So we ask that through this conversation today and through our lives that we would you would take this and help us to find ways to protect kids, to look out for them, to raise the issue of child safety. That would be a God-honoring environment, each of us living and working with kids around us. To your name's sake and to your glory, Lord, we commit these things in Jesus' name. Amen.